This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my hosts as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, you know, if you follow me on social media, you know that I live on a farm. I got a lot of animals, goats, pigs, horses, miniature horses, alpacas, chicken. What am I forgetting? I think we're about to get a couple of tiny little sheep. I got this place in the 80s and, a kid growing up in the city, I just really started to connect a lot with animals and with nature, and I, for some reason, developed this love of horses, and that was really what brought me to buy this piece of property back in 1983. But I find that when I start caring for another creature, it really helps me to kind of recenter my days, and I think that spending time, certainly in lockdown, around living, breathing animals and connecting with them was incredibly helpful. And to this day, my wife and I will just say, oh, wow, you know, we haven't been down to hang out with the animals today. And we'll just go and sit there and just, I don't know, doodle it up and, you know, hang out with them. And it can be a very, very therapeutic moment. The fabulous Amanda Seyfried is our guest today on the podcast, and she also lives on a farm, and I really love this person, and I love that she is so compassionate for all creatures. Apparently not male ducks, however, but a little bit more on that later. So if you love animals, lean in and listen up. I'm glad you're here. Amanda, thank you so much for being here. It's so good to see you. As I've told you multiple times, I admire you so much for your chameleon-like work. A lot of us are pretty good at doing maybe one thing and maybe two. And I'm talking about some of our greatest, greatest performers. But you are someone who really, really, truly does disappear into all sorts of different kinds of parts, as well as all sorts of different kinds of genres of movie. I mean, you really, your career has been completely unclassified. And I just wondered if when you start out, you were really young, right? And you start to do this thing where you're gonna, you know, become somebody else. Was it in your mind to try to have the kind of career, to try to explore the different kinds of variety of parts that you have been able to?
No, it was, here, listen, here's the thing. You said amazing things. I really appreciate all everything that your perspective on my acting is really meaningful, because you have continued to bring any kind of refreshing angle or take to any new character. You always find something different to do. It's never boring. You're never one thing. It's that kind of career that, like, most people want. You're able to bend yourself in ways that, you know, people wish they could, and I try to do. And I think the answer to that question is that I very deliberately wanted to bend myself as much as possible when I was younger, so I didn't fit into any mold, or I didn't let the industry put me in any mold, because it was super easy to do to a young blonde girl next door.
Sure.
And then I was like, but it was totally this movie, Chloe, that I think got people within the industry, like producers and actors and casting directors, to see that I was kind of pushing my own boundaries, and they were like, okay. Mm-hmm. And that creates trust, maybe not with everybody, but with enough people, so they can start seeing me in other ways. You know, it's a little harder for women, it seems, to
Definitely.
Get out of that box.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything is harder for in our industry for women. But I also think that you make a very good point, which a lot of people don't really necessarily get unless they happen to choose this life. And that is that people really would rather have you do the same thing, especially if that thing that you've done has been successful. You know, first time I was in a successful movie, they just wanted to find pretty much the same movie for me to do again. But they weren't sequels. They were just in that same sort of pocket. And pushing back against that sometimes it's a couple of things. Number one, it is, without even knowing it, it's pretty risky, you know, because you're not leaning towards the money, really. You know, you're leaning towards something that satisfies you creatively. But, you know, I think that you've really been able to do that. And also, as I pointed out, across all kinds of genres, I mean, comedy and musicals and horror and dramas and you know, real, you know, what are they called? Rip from the headlines type characters and all this stuff. I mean, it really is amazing. Now, is there, we've probably discussed this before, but is there one thing that's at the top of the list when you look through that giant pile of scripts that come via email to you? Just you don't even have enough room on the hard drive for all those PDFs.
Yeah, and just mountains, man.
I mean, is it, you know, director, star, whatever?
It's director. It's totally director. And if it's somebody who's very new to the industry or new to directing, or at least somebody that we haven't seen before, it's the script. It just has to have it. There's got to be something incredibly interesting about the character and what the character goes through. Even if it's just me on my own in a short film, just if this person has a true vision and an incredibly like fascinating story, or at least grounded, or at least realistic story, then I'm in.
But you do so many other things besides this acting stuff. What have you been busy with since we've been on strike?
Well, when the pandemic hit, we were all kind of at a standstill in every industry, of course, everywhere. So my creative brain was still churning out like fiber art, as it does, because I can't stop. But with fiber art, you can only do so much, and you're always stuck in your little bubble on the couch or wherever you are. And
explain to those people that might not know what fiber art is.
Oh, just anything you can make with yarn, really.
Yeah, because I've seen you fiber arting on on a set before, and I didn't even know that there was that was the thing. Anything that could be done with yarn.
Yeah, I was very deep into weaving while we were working together. It's just and knitting, of course. But I needed my friends and I, my friends who aren't actors, aren't in this business at all. We grew up together, and so we started this business. That God, starting a business is hard, and also doing something to create, to generate money also feels weird, because when you, I'm usually working with organizations, charities, working to generate money from investors to donate to a certain cause. And this felt different because the cause is our product. And so it's very different. And I'm used to using myself as a marketing tool to get people to donate to these very specific organizations, like War Child, Best Friends, Inara. And I think with starting a business, it was all mine. We started it together, the three of us. So we were all founders, and we were all, what we say goes, we're all so in control of what we were building, and we really believed in it. And so that was just weird. It's kind of a new path.
Because you were out there looking for investors, looking for seed money to get going.
We never did that. We actually kept it all in-house between us.
Mm-hmm.
That was really great, but it's still weird to try to get people to buy your product.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe in it, and it is amazing. But it is like, I started a business. I started a business, and that's what it is. And
this is Make It Cute, right?
Make It Cute. And we have a charitable factor to it. Like it's, you know, we are in the sustainable business, and it's really great to network and connect with other people that are like-minded. And in this generation where we're trying to buy less for our kids. And when we do buy things, we want to buy things that are recycled, and we want to be responsible with as consumers, because we are, you know, we're always going to be in this capitalist society. So why not create something that does less damage to the world? And we're doing that. But at the core of it, I really like designing playhouses. Okay.
Yeah, tell us about the product though, because I just saw it, and it looks really super cool.
Do you want one?
Sure. Don't I need little kids?
I don't think so. Actually, we are gonna make a smaller version for animals, because people have been asking us. And it was always my design. My friends are like, yeah, maybe. And I was like, we must. Because I've got my Finn, I've got my dog, and yeah, it's made out of cardboard. And you can call it corrugate, but the layperson says cardboard, and people are like, well, our kids make stuff out of cardboard all the time. And unfortunately, we've got these massive like boats that look like crap, and they don't want to throw them away. So why not make something that's incredibly easy to use? I mean, it folds up. So it's made from recycled. Well, cardboard is has to be 50% at least.
And they're playhouses, right?
And they're playhouses. It's three little pieces. There's no assembly. You do have to assemble it, but it's just three pieces, and you just pop it open and you put it in and put the roof on, and then you're done.
So what was the genesis of that idea? I mean, how did that, what made you even think about
there
that?
There was a hole in the marketplace.
A hole in the marketplace. Do your partners have kids too?
Yeah, we all have kids at the same.
Because you have two kids. How old are the kids now?
Six and a half and three.
Mm-hmm.
And theirs are six and a half and four. And we were all pregnant with our first the same time. We all like went on vacations together. We've been best friends since we were five.
Oh, wow.
And they all have different like experiences. Like Maureen was a physician's assistant. She still is. And Anne quit her job when she had kids. She has a very good business sales mind. And she's also incredibly design forward. And just we have similar tastes. And we just were like, Anne was building these playhouses out of all this refrigerator box, and there were double wall, which is, a box is normally like an Amazon box. It's like one wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it breaks down easily, and it's great. But she was building them with like extra shingles, and she was painting them with Farrow & Ball colors and everything that we love to see in our own homes. And she's like, this is where I throw all the toys in at night. And this is how I have my zen back with all these kids' crappy toys. Sorry, it's junk. A lot of it's junk. And then we were like, there's nothing like this. There's nothing cute. All the playhouses, if they're cardboard, they're a pain to put together, and they're not nice looking at all.
And plus, I love that you're not using plastic, because, you know, Well, that's one of the tough, that's a whole other conversation about, you know, our overuse of plastic and what's more single use than a playhouse once your kid, you know, grows out of
right.
it. And that's just a lot of stuff that's gonna never break down.
And it doesn't break down. There's a lot of like different materials that aren't plastic, you know, those there's canvas tents and stuff, and it takes at least an hour to put together. They're some of them are insanely expensive. The kid craft stuff is great for outside. Our product is not outside, but it's just like it was a giant hole in the market where like I don't want to build that. I want that. Mm. I don't want to build it. I want someone to do it for me, and I don't want to have any butt clenching when I'm at the checkout in online. Because we were doing market research too when we started our business. We had to buy all of them, and I mean, it was stressful because we knew what we needed to do. But we needed help making it. We needed engineers. We needed cardboard companies, people that work with this material. We did it all on our own. And then we met somebody Robert, who actually created Green Toys, him and his partner created mm-hmm. Green Toys, which is all those really cool trucks made out of plastic milk jugs. So it looks like plastic. It's durable like plastic, but it's not.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool. Made out of recycled material, and it uh-huh. blew up. He sold his company. Now he's an employee of ours. He's a consultant. He helps with our finances. But I'm telling you, Kevin, business is hard. We're finally starting to talk to investors. Like, I can't do it anymore. We have a lot of people interested. We've sent it out to so many people. We did quality control. We've met everybody we work with in the facilities and on the East mm-hmm. Coast. It's expensive to build things in the U.S. It's just keeping things sustainable is expensive. So it's like, I don't know if this business is, you know, to make money as much as it is to create something that we love, hopefully one day.
That's great.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell me, how's your music?
Thank God I'm working.
Have you been?
Are you doing
singing?
Anything? Are you doing any?
No, I'm out with the band. We're playing a lot of shows this fall.
Around the country or like everywhere?
All around the country. Yeah, we're on our way. What's our next run? I think our next run is maybe Texas, and then we're going down south. And we were just up in Maine a couple of days ago. So yeah, we're actually playing a lot. And the weird thing about being in a band is that the gigs get booked like oftentimes way in advance of when my acting gigs get booked. So I'm always a little bit stressed out because I say, well, if something's going to come through, then we're going to have to, you know, cancel a show or boot it down the road. And or I'll have to be flying from some place to another place to another place, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles. And because of the strike, we've been just able to play all these shows and it's been great. I feel very grateful to have that. I think both of us, Kira and I, have kind of realized during this strike that we're for better or for worse, we're kind of workaholics. You know, we really do like to work. So it's been a hole.
That's the thing. We create all these other worlds for ourselves on purpose or not on purpose. And because we want to be creating and I mean, yes, we're artists and we're actors, but we're artists. So it's like, that's many things. Like you traveling with your band and being able to finally say, yes, are you available? Yes. Can you do?
Yeah.
Yes. Instead of trying to fit in, try to do it all in, because there's only enough time in the day. And so right now, yeah, I feel privileged too that we're on strike for a great reason. We got to keep negotiating. We've got to sort this out sooner than later because people need to work.
They definitely do. What's the thing on the stage, speaking of fulfilling yourself?
It's a Thelma Louise musical, and I've been working on it since,
Oh, that is so exciting.
But am I ready for that? Is my body really ready to do?
To the 8 shows a week? Of course it is.
Is it, though? Because I did that, and it was really great, and it was hard, and I didn't have any kids, and I didn't live here on the farm full time.
You were with Tommy, with your husband, right? Weren't you guys in a play together? Yeah.
But this is music, and this is Broadway. So there was no pressure to do off-Broadway and no music. This is music. I am going to be singing. If I lose my voice, I'm not going to be able to drink as much as I like to drink.
There is that.
And the kids don't go to school in the city, so it's just, am I ready for it? But I keep thinking, it's a dream come true. Every challenge has a rainbow at the end of it. And it's going to be amazing. God, I'm so excited.
Do you love the music that's
yes.
in the show? That's great. And so you have all the songs now, so you can literally work on them all the time.
Yeah, because we did, well, they're probably changing because we only did 2 workshops. Have you ever done a musical? Mm-hmm.
Never done a musical, no. I did one show where it was about the Yale Whiffenpoofs, which was is the a cappella group at Yale. Yeah, we did a play probably in the, I don't know, the 80s or something like that in New York off Broadway. And so they were singing in that, but it was definitely not a musical. So you have the songs. Is it the work part? Are you feeling like you really want to strengthen your voice? Is that the thing to make it through the 8 shows?
Stamina. I need stamina.
Or 7 shows or whatever.
I also need to find my middle voice again. I mean, I've been training in a different way with different music for so long for fun. And then now I'm just getting back to like the ahs, because there's a lot of ahs, and I hate singing. You know, we sing, we go in our middle voice and head voice. It's like oohs and ees are so easy. So working on ahs, which is,
Is it, are the songs, do they kind of sit in the pop rock world, or are they more traditional Broadway
kind
of stuff?
It's Nico Case. So it's like all rock and folk. It's my dream. It's like, it couldn't be better.
Oh, that's so great.
Because we had just, Tommy and I had just seen Nico Case at Levon Helm Studios. Wait, have you played there before?
Yeah, we played there. Yeah, we played with Levon when he was alive.
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
Yeah, the Midnight Ramble, yeah. It was quite an experience, you know. It's a great place for people that don't know. Levon had this barn up in Woodstock. And it's in Woodstock, right?
Yeah, it's in Woodstock.
Yeah, that he built. And, we get the opportunity to go and essentially play in this barn to a small but great crowd, amazing sound. And then you're kind of opening for Levon. In this case, it was Levon and Larry Campbell and a bunch of great players. And then at the end of it, he get asked you to sit in, and it was such a great experience. He's one of my favorite drummers, and I got to sit sort of like lean against this radiator that's against the wall behind him, and watch his amazing left hand and the stuff that his left hand was doing. And it was a great night for me. I actually acted with him a few years ago, many years ago, in a movie, so we kind of knew each other already, but that was great. Anyway, so what did you saw? What did you see up there at that?
We saw Nico, yeah, and it was incredible, and it was our first time at Levon Helm Studio, and we sat there, and it was Tommy's, my husband is the biggest Nico Case fan like of all time. For his birthday, I had his daughter learn, our daughter, sorry, his daughter, my daughter, our daughter. I had her learn. I wish I was the moon tonight. And she learned the entire thing, and that's like one of her best songs, and the lyrics are crazy for a 6-year-old to be singing. Amazing. But I was doing my second workshop with Nico at the time. I was teaching my daughter the song, and she listened. I showed her the video of her practicing, and she was just so blown away. And she was like, "Are you trying to kill him?" And I was like, "He's, you know, it's her voice speaks to him and me and many people, and it made people feel safer in the world. Nico Case is a treasure, a national treasure, and the fact that she's composing all of the music for this show is just so kismet. And it makes me feel like this was like sent to me from God, because I can sing it and I feel connected to it in a way that I don't feel with a lot of people, a lot of musicians. And also I get to act and I get to play Thelma and I get to work with friends. You know, Trip Coleman's directing, a beautiful theater director.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
And so many wonderful people are part of it. And Mandy, who ran Williamstown for a long time, who I'm friends with, and it's just like such a perfect little pocket of art for me to now fulfill.
That's gonna be
for
great.
Myself.
I can't wait to see that. When do you go into rehearsal?
I think we have our third workshop in November, which is a 2-week workshop. So we do all of the songs again and everything again, and then we have like most of our cast, and then I think we're hoping for January 2025, because we need this next year to, putting new musical out on Broadway is apparently the process.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I have time.
Yes, it is. Well, that's so exciting. Now, I want to just talk about you grew up in Allentown, and I know that you just have this great, great, deep love for animals. Did you have animals or ride horses when you were younger or any of that? No, you didn't grow up on a farm in Allentown. No. So what do you think it came out of?
I truly don't know.
And you're in a barn
right
now. I love
animals.
Right? Yeah.
We're in a barn. This is the, like, really, this was an old stable, right. Obviously. We made into these two rooms our guest rooms.
Nice.
This is like the middle barn. The barn where that's actually over there. You can kind of see it right over there. That's like the barn. And that's, you know, where all the good stuff happens, where all the sick animals come in when they need help.
So you take animals in. I didn't realize that. You take,
like, for instance, we're getting two new horses and the fencing guys are here right now to fix the third paddock. And we only have three and we'll only ever have three. And we always will always, you know, be at capacity. But everybody in the town kind of knows what our deal is. We'll take in animals who are very old and they all pretty much pass away here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sanctuary, essentially.
Okay.
And we get retirees. So this retiree is coming. He's 30 years old. He's coming on this weekend once the fencing's done. And he's coming with a friend.
A horse.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Because you have some other stuff too. You have got goats.
We mainly, it's like we can have as many mini horses as anyone can have because we have room.
Uh-huh.
We have a retiree, a trail horse who's 30 and he was going to go off to auction. So we were just like, he can come here. And then his friend, but his friend is not retired. He's 10 years old and he's in great health.
Oh, good.
So that's not normal. We don't normally take in people who are in great health.
Do you get up on them ever? I mean, they sound like they're not sound, but
well, no, this guy is going to be the first sound guy.
Oh, okay.
It's 30-year-olds.
Oh, the 30-year-old. Oh.
The 10-year-old I wouldn't get on because I'm not experienced enough, but he can be broken and he will be one day hopefully, but the 30-year-old is the one that I'm going to put my kids on.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. That's very exciting. And you have goats and your beloved dog.
My beloved dog and ducks. We've just taken in two more ducks. Ducks are a real pain. I don't recommend it. Do you have ducks?
No, chickens, but no ducks.
Yeah, no ducks. Don't do it. It's horrible.
Okay.
they're very, very vicious to each other.
Wow. Oh, okay. I didn't know that about ducks. Well, I think that's a good segue. Is Julie available to hop on with us?
Hey.
Hi, Julie. You guys know each other.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
There's Julie Castle from Best Friends Animal Society. Julie, thank you so much for joining Amanda and me.
It's an honor to be here. Big, big fans of both of your work.
Thanks.
Back at you.
You too. You know, I was reading up about you and have just what I find to be pretty fascinating journey into what it is that you do. So maybe just explain that. It's almost like you're on your way to law school and got a flat tire or something and ended up going into animal rescue. But talk to me about
that. Isn't that how it happens?
You know, I think it's a measure of really, I don't want to sound too woo, but it's a measure of really being open to the universe, you know. And I just graduated from college and my friends and I knew it was our last hurrah before graduate school. So we decided to take a trip to Mexico. And at the time I drove this really old 1979 Dodge Colt and it had a different color panel. Every panel was a different color because I'd been in so many accidents. And we stayed down there until we ran out of money. And we realized that we had just enough for a candy bar each and gas to drive 1,800 miles back home. And we decided to drive straight through. And my friend who was with us, she was a huge animal fan. And she'd been donating to this small sanctuary in southern Utah. She begged us to stop at this sanctuary. None of us wanted to. We hadn't showered. We were tired. We were fighting. Finally, we agreed to stop just to kind of shut her up. And we pulled into this magnificent canyon. Red Rock Canyon that in any other state would be a national park. And I was so taken by the spiritual nature of the place. I was taken by the founders And I was taken by the ethic of no kill. I'd never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. And
well, maybe you could just explain to us what that means. No kill.
Yeah. No kill is really, it's a philosophy. It's that every life has intrinsic value, and every life that can be saved should be saved. In pure data terms, it means we know that about 90% of all the animals that enter America's shelter system are savable. And that 10%, sometimes they need to be humanely euthanized. Either they're too sick or injured, or maybe their behavior issues are too severe. And so that's the pure definition of no kill. But for us, it really is a philosophy.
And so you saw this animal sanctuary and you decided to just, that your life would take a different path?
So I saw this animal sanctuary. We pulled out of the sanctuary and I stopped the car at a gas station and put a couple of quarters in the payphone and called my dad and said, "Hey, I'm not going to the University of Virginia Law School. I'm moving to Kanab, Utah." And I,
How did that go?
Was so happy for me. No, he
really?
Was. I don't think he got over it for a decade because it was really hard scrabble stuff in those early days. You know, I was making $183 every 2 weeks. You know, we didn't really have an HR department.
And that was in Kanab?
That was in Kanab. And you were expected to do whatever it took just to keep the lights on and keep the animals fed. And so it was tough. It was it's still tough in its own way, but back then.
Were the majority of the animals horses?
No, we had about 700 dogs.
700 dogs?
500 cats.
How do you keep, I can't imagine 700 dogs.
Oh, it was crazy. I was employee number 17. So there were 17 employees and then the founders, there were about 20 founders. So all told, there were about 40 people taking care of this massive sanctuary. You know, the acreage back then was about 3,000 acres.
Oh my God. Well, I've been to Kanab and where I hear you have a pizza joint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I want to go to. But it's hard for me to imagine that there's that many animals even around there. It's not a very heavily populated part of the world.
No, it's not. Kanab is one of the most sparsely populated places in America. So we knew social distancing before it became a thing.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season two of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we are so thrilled to share that Best Friends Animal Society is partnering with Warner Brothers Discovery for the 20th anniversary Puppy Bowl to help animals find their loving home and match donations to cover adoption fees for their pet life-saving centers nationwide from February 7th to the 14th. All you got to do is text PUPPY, that's P-U-P-P-Y, to 707070, or head to puppybowl.com to donate to double your impact or find a shelter near you. Watch Puppy Bowl on Animal Planet Sunday, February 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time.
We've got parrots and bunnies and pigs and horses, and we have a whole wildlife department where we see golden eagles and bald eagles and hawks and deer and bobcat and all sorts of things.
And what do you think about, Amanda and I were speaking about her desire, I don't know how this works, to actually kind of take her own property and try to make it and try to use it as a obviously, I don't think you're going to be able to fit that many dogs at your place, will you? But just try to use it as a sanctuary. Is that something that you can, that people can actually look into doing, and that you can help them with, or navigating? You were talking about navigating the governmental rules around that, and I'm curious about that.
Yeah, we have a whole course on that, how to start.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Sanctuary, where we go through all that for people. How to get how to register for a 501c3 status, what legal support you need, what your operating budget should look like, basic animal care. We go through the whole thing, and we get a lot of people that have come through that course over the years. We've been doing it for about 30 years, and our whole premise is just to be generous with our experience, with our knowledge, with the success that we've had. We really, really believe that passing that along to other organizations and people, it just makes this community stronger as it,
yeah,
should,
inspiring
as it should be.
People to, like, if they want to, if they really want to do this, take animals in, or at least advocating for animals at any at any cost, like just to get people, just to get it on their minds, to know that they can do that, because everybody can advocate for what they believe in, and especially animals, because they don't have voices. It's just like, I love that you're teaching people how to save animals, like physically save them too, and bring them into their homes. It's like fostering is like one of the most incredible things that that humans can do, because they take them in and until they can find homes. And I think that's amazing too. Like, you get people to really foster. If they can't commit to these animals, they foster them, but then they also have to get rid of them and send them away to their forever home. And it's like the most selfless thing I feel like that you can do. And you guys are so good at advocating for that too.
Do people come to you and adopt off of the best friends?
Yeah, they do. And our sanctuary holds a really special place, because it really is the place where most animals that come here need that extra love or attention, extra medical care, extra special needs. But we've got life-saving centers all over the country, because
I see.
Broader goal is to end the killing of shelter pets by 2025. Mm-hmm. And so the bulk of our adoptions take place in one of those centers or through our network partners.
Okay.
About 4,400 now. So.
And do you do it also online? Do people go and look at animals online and come from other places? Because like you said, I mean, there's so few people in Kanab, for instance, that you know, or do most of the animals in Kanab just kind of stay there?
No. And
they come.
This, like, destination location for people. So
I want to go. I really want to go. I want to go see it.
Yeah, I would have.
Not that I don't need any more animals, but I would like to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy how many people see it online, see an animal that they want to meet, and they travel all the way out to Kanab, fall in love, have a new family member.
I want to ask you both something. Mandy, we can start with you. And I'll give you an example. I'm the youngest of six. And to me, this is this really is kind of a head scratcher for me. With all of my brothers and sisters, the desire to be around animals, be comfortable with animals, have animals, it goes from I don't want to ever see any animals in my life to a complete obsession with one of my sisters, you know, has always had multiple dogs, sometimes four at a time, and is just, you know, obsessed with her dogs.
Full time.
And I'm just wondering, because both of you actually clearly care deeply about, you know, all these creatures. What do you think it is that makes somebody feel that way about them or not? Because I can't figure it out for myself, and I can't figure it out for the people in my family.
It's almost like it feels like nature talks through animals more than it does humans. I guess because animals are simpler and it's easier to trust, maybe. Maybe there's just maybe you feel closer to God with them. For me, I feel closer to nature. I feel like the energy from an animal gives me a sense of belonging in the world. I still can't make sense of it, so I can't really answer your question. I just know how I feel when I'm around them, and how I feel when they're hurt. And I think that they need our help. They don't deserve it. They don't, to see an animal in pain is just like, you have to intervene, because they most need it. It's up to them, I guess. But especially if you can, you know, intervene and help them, you should. But it's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm more fulfilled. Maybe it's just like a selfish need, but also like, there's a symbiosis happening, you know, when I'm in the mornings, when I go out and feed. It's just, even if the mini's trying to kick me I can't fault them for any. They're just innocent.
Your minis try to kick you?
That's just the wand, the guy. He's had a really hard life. And it's not his fault. So it's just like I have to be careful around him, you know? And it, yeah, he really whips. He's very, no, but they couldn't walk when they got here. So they, it's just like, there's just something so incredible. And you know this, Julie, you like the impact that you had for like millions of them. It's just like you know there's a spiritual level to caring for animals and being around them, being in their presence that like really just.
Yeah, how about for you, Julie?
You know, I mean, I feel like it's almost some of it, I think, is your proximate location to animals growing up. And I think the younger you're exposed, the younger you're exposed, the more quickly that develops. It's almost like a sixth sense. And, you know, you hear people talk about developing that sixth sense. I think with animals, that bond is so powerful once you experience it. Because it's almost on a different plane to me. It's like there's no judgment. There's no, these are special beings that we inhabit the earth with. And for us to think that somehow we're the, you know, we are the elevated being on this planet, I think for obvious reasons, you know, we gravitate toward that. But at the end of the day, it's quite arrogant to place ourselves on this different level when the reality is we are all connected.
You have a goal in 2025. Can you talk to us about that?
Oh, it's so like this is what gets me up in the morning. You know, when you think about these founders that started this organization and this sanctuary in the middle of nowhere, really smart people, and they just ask the simple question, why as a society have we chosen to round up animals, put them in a shelter, and exterminate them? It's just such a, the practice was crazy. And, you know, it's something that had been going on for 110 years by the time they rolled around. And so their idea was so radical and novel, but so simple and So I can't even imagine that today, because back then the estimation was 17 to 20 million animals were dying every day in America's shelters. We have gotten that number down to 385,000.
That's incredible.
To think about, a lot of these founders are still alive and active in the organization. And to imagine that you could bookend actually changing the world in your lifetime, starting this movement, and then seeing it, you know, get across the finish line. I just marvel at that, for real. And so you think, okay, there's 380,000 animals that are still dying. That's 1,000 a day, roughly. It's a lot. It's like 43 an hour or something.
And how do you decide who goes and who stays? It's just like, I can't imagine being in that position.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
tough.
What needs to happen. Like, how does it get that bad? Because there's just no room.
It's a combination of factors. You know, some of these shelters that we work with, we worked with one in a fairly decently sized city. This was right before COVID. We have programs all over the country. We walked into the shelter, 30,000 animals were coming in every year. 26,000 were dying. And within a year and a half, we had taken that shelter from, you know, saving 4,000 lives a year to completely getting them to 90%, and they have never gone back. And that's the beautiful thing. It's a combination of letting the public know you're there, really marketing these animals to the public, because 17 million people are going to get a pet this year. We know that for a fact. Mm. That gap, that delta between 17 million and 385, this is not rocket science. Like, we're talking about putting people on Mars and we can't figure this out. There's something
Yeah,
up there.
that's a fascinating statistic. Is there a some place that people can go either to learn about the work you're doing or to find an animal? You know, it's this is the moment for the call to action.
Yeah, we've got 2 years left to solve this. We're all in. We're all working very hard. You can go to bestfriends.org. There's so many different ways to get involved. Amanda mentioned fostering, which immediately saves a life. There, we have an action team that helps locally. We've got a network of rescues and shelters that's 4,400 strong that we support every single day, and that, you know, we hope others support through volunteering and donating. But you can go on our website, you can see all of our adoptable animals, and there's a lot of different ways you can get involved, even if you don't have the time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love what you're doing, you know, on behalf of, let's say, Doc and Norma Jean and Jolene and Apollo and June and Johnny and Lucy and little Ricky and Desi Jr. and Sharona and Kate, who am I forgetting? Thank you. They wanted me to say thank you for all that what you're doing. It's really amazing.
Thank you.
And both of you, keep up the good work. Amanda, I hope that you can continue to work this angle of taking in animals that need help.
I've so enjoyed my time with Best Friends. It's always such a celebration instead of, I mean, you look at the numbers and they're harrowing, and it's really upsetting to know, yes, it's 300, it's less than half are being euthanized, but it's still so many. Like, it's not ignoring that fact, but it's also celebrating the fact that you're going in the right direction, and nobody's stopping. So I'm thrilled. I mean, it's coming up, and it's every day. I know how much you love your job, and it really rubs off.
Well, thank you, and we're grateful for your support. And you know, it's I think there's an authenticity to you that I really gravitate toward. I know a lot of people do. There's just this, you know, really special message that you have to deliver about just about anything you talk about. So it's very cool to, you know, have both of you support this cause so deeply, and I'm super grateful. And I think at the end of the day, it really is a noble cause. Like, it's one of those that, you know, there's no divide to it, really. There's no politics around it in terms of, you know, when 80% of Americans have a pet at home, you know, it's one of those rare causes that so many different people get behind. And it's just a true honor for me to do this. Like, I feel like this work is not, I didn't choose this. It's like what you said earlier. I kind of just walked into this, and I feel like I'm really not, it's at some other hand, whatever that may be.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. I really do appreciate your time.
It's so nice to hear your voice and see your face. So.
Yeah, back at you. Back at you. And I think it's very, very fitting that you did this interview from a barn.
Thank you so much.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of 6 Degrees with Kevin Bacon. And if you want to learn more about the Best Friends Animal Society and all that incredible work that they are up to, head to their website, bestfriends.org. That's bestfriends.org. You can find all the links in our show notes. And if you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to the show and tune in to the rest of our episodes. You can find 6 Degrees with Kevin Bacon on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.
If you are inspired by today's episode, please join us in supporting 6degrees.org by texting the word BACON to 707070. Your gift empowers us to continue to produce programs that highlight the incredible work of everyday heroes, while also enabling us to provide essential resources to those that need it the most. Once again, text BACON to 707070 or visit 6degrees.org to learn more.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards. Like Rob Riley, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.